It's nearly Christmas. Open the 215th door on your Kaiju Pop advent calendar now. We gave that away with the first episode of the Kaiju Popcast.
I hope you kept yours.
In 2012, when KaijuPop.com launched, you got a free advent calendar.
It takes up your entire wall.
Yep. We've been opening them away. How many doors are on it, listeners? Then you'll find out when me, Chris Charlton, Chad O'Brien, and Jason Gibson will die on the air. Last one, there's just you open it, and it's just like a skull. It's like three skulls.
Does opening the door cause us to die, or do we die then you find out?
It's sort of a chicken and egg scenario, isn't it? That's right. Yeah. Good. It's nearly Christmas, and that means fuck all's happening in video games, and won't happen until like February or something. This or like March, I don't know. This is where we go through weeks of, well, there's no news this week, isn't it?
We make up our lists instead.
It's why we make up our lists, yeah. So that's all right, because we've got we're going to pursue our year-end awards, and Jason's going to reveal his games of the year this week on the podcast.
Yep.
And then after that, you do, oh, let's look forward to 2017. And then after that, you sit around with your thumb up your ass and try and make news up for a little bit. Trying to make a big deal out of news that isn't normally a big deal, like some sort of Final Fantasy 15 patch, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to briefly touch on this because Final Fantasy 15 came out a couple of weeks ago, and for better or worse, people have reviewed it. A lot of people like it. I still love it. Haven't gotten to it this week because I'm clearing other stuff away, but I'm a real big fan of what they did with the game. But I haven't progressed very far, and that seems to have kind of been a boon for me, because recently we were told that director Tabata is working on a patch for the game, an upcoming patch that is going to drastically change kind of how the story plays out. So, of course, patches are nothing new for games. We get, you know, bug fixes and everything like that. But this time, we've been specifically told that in addition to gameplay enhancements, there will be story enhancements for a specific chapter, chapter 13. I haven't gotten there, so I don't know what will change. But at the same time, Tabata has gone on to say that after this patch that they're already working on to change the story, they're going to delve deeper and add scenes that give new insight into character motivations, and add in all this other stuff that, like, to a degree that it needs to be localized and voiced. So they're going to bring in new kind of content that way.
Is this some of the stuff that, so I gather, I haven't played Final Fantasy 15. It is under my Christmas tree, as far as I know. But is this, like, part of the problem I've heard people complaining is that a bunch of the backstory that's kind of important is in that Kingsglaive movie that nobody watched?
No, not so much, because the Kingsglaive, it's not so much of a backstory. It's literally what happens, like, the day before Final Fantasy 15 begins. Or even not even just that. It's what happens during, like, the chapter 2, chapter 3 interlude kind of thing.
But didn't they do a day one patch to add a bunch of that stuff in?
Right. And so that's added in. But this is something completely new. They're just changing the story. Apparently there were complaints that chapter 13 was too short. And so they're just adding in completely new story elements. Why I wanted to bring this up is I find this kind of a terrible thing to do. Because I've mentioned before that I'm kind of intrigued by how certain games have turned themselves around, like Division did and No Man's Sky is doing, by adding in new gameplay elements to bring players back. But at the same time, like, this is a game that's out and the story is out and people made reviews based on what the story is, and now they're saying, oh, by the way, we're actually going to just change the story now. We're going to add in new story elements. And for people who have finished the game, whether it takes, you know, whether they've spent 15 hours or 60 hours or 100 hours, like, they've completed it. And now it's like, right. Oh, by the way, all the story you played, there's now new stuff that you kind of have to play again to go see, because you can't just go back to chapter 13, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. But, and then he also says, you know, we're going to add in more story stuff down the line. And it's like, okay, well then, why should I play now? I'm not a big fan of this.
Right.
So, sounds like you should wait and open yours next Christmas,
Chris. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. It sounds a bit like the Mass Effect 3
right.
situation.
Yeah.
They patched in a different ending. To be honest, in that instance, I didn't play the new ending. I played like the original ending. And I thought, scenario ending, really? It's of all the problems that Mass Effect 3 had, and it had quite a significant number of them. Like, the least glaring was the ending of it. it's weird, isn't it? Fucking hell. Yeah, you kind of expect gameplay features, like you said, a few extra modes. You know, usually that sort of, and the game never ends, is a multiplayer thing.
Yep, yeah.
That is
kind of an interesting thing as well. They said that they're going to add in new modes, like a new game plus, and that's fine. But one of the weirdest additions they said they're going to add in is making certain key characters playable, and then considering the possibility of customizable avatars. And that's the weirdest point, because Noctis is a key figure in the game, and they're going to make him customizable.
He's the main character.
I mean, kind of, yeah. I would say so. Like,
but like, is his appearance key to the game? Is it just me, like, cosmetic stuff?
Okay, maybe not so much, but at the same time, like, it's what they've shown for the entire thing. Like, every bit of promotional marketing has been that face. I guess you could say they did the same thing for Mass Effect, but at the same time, you always knew you could change yourself for Mass Effect. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Anyway, I just wanted to kind of get that off my chest. I think that's kind of a weird thing to do.
I think they ought to just patch in the gold saucer, man. I would buy it just for that.
You can go to the gold saucer in Final Fantasy 14 online. So.
Ooh.
There you go.
There you go. Patch in airships or something. I know. I played Final Fantasy for ages. Okay, well, the other big sort of gaming news, because there is no other news, let's segue into what we've been playing and the other big gaming news at the same time. because Nintendo put out their first, I guess you could say, their first proper video game on iOS.
Not just an app.
Not just Miitomo, it's an app, not just sort of Pokemon Go, which was somebody else. This is Mario actually running around and being in a Mario game on another platform. And that was Super Mario Run, which came out this week. Kind of as expected, instantly shot to the top in sort of most downloaded on the App Store. Didn't quite do that everywhere in terms of highest grossing, which is kind of understandable, and it's been sort of clawing its way up. Actually, like in Japan, it debuted at something 106th or something in terms of like paid apps. And then that's shot up over the last couple of days. Just, I think it's in the top five now, or it was six or something like that.
It's top grossing in 30 countries now, according to VentureBeat.
Yeah. So that's pretty decent, because it is a significant amount of money to hand over for an app. For an iOS game, it's 1,200 yen, which is cheap. You know, I mean, like, you know, it's ten. I think it's 1,200 yen, $10, or whatever.
It's cheap to people whose main gaming is on the console market, but
Exactly. But on iOS sense, it's a little bit expensive, and already indignant one-star reviews do exist for Super Mario Run, saying, I can't believe I have to pay money for it. You know, and so yeah, there was one that I saw on Twitter where, like, it was this guy saying, I can't believe there's a paywall in this game. I can't believe, you know, you play the first levels for nothing and then you have to pay money. It's ridiculous. He made, like, this nonsensical argument of, I'd rather pay all the money up front than start playing for free and then have to pay. I don't get that.
Like, no, nor do I.
At all. I don't really understand that. I don't think he understands what a paywall is. I said, like, I'm amazed he can find his way into a shop or something.
I mean,
paywalls everywhere. I can't get into this shop.
I would love to go back to those days when you got to try out a few levels before you actually had to buy a game.
Yeah, and there is, I mean, like, the thing is, you get the first world for free, and there's, like, a lot of kind of content in that.
Mm-hmm.
It's much like a lot of Mario games, the most recent Mario games, like you play through the stages and whatnot, and that's fairly simple. Actually, it's a very difficult game. It's probably one of the hardest recent Marios that I've played anyway. But you play through just normally, and then there's sort of 5 pink coins hidden through the stages. And if you get all of them, then you get a bunch of extra stuff, and then it's like, well, you go through into the level again, and this time you're looking for purple coins, and then you're looking for secret black coins or whatever. So you can play each level like 4 times, and it's ever more difficult to get to those points. So it's like smartly designed like that. So you do get a lot of content for free. I paid for it up front, and I'm like halfway through just basically going through the levels. And yeah, it's good. It's good. I go through points of like really liking it and then really being a little bit iffy on it. It's very, if you're expecting a Mario game, it's very strange in more than one way. First of all, like, it looks like shit, and like, it looks even more like shit than your new Super Mario Brothers aesthetic looks, because I hate the new Super Mario Brothers like art aesthetic. But it looks even stranger here, because I think you're playing on portrait, and you might have seen it if you've watched video of it. Just Mario himself looks fucked up. Like, the way the screen orientation is, he looks kind of alright if you've got a mushroom and you're Super Mario. But if you're like just like regular little Mario, his body is proportionately fucking tiny. Like, he's just a head on a like a tiny little wee like pom-pom ball size body. It just looks really strange, like, especially at the end of the level where it zooms in on him. It looks super fucking weird. And it's weird to play a Mario game where you're constantly moving, you know what I mean? Because even more weird than, say, Rayman. Because, like, Rayman did it, and it's a different... That's kind of a different type of platform game to Mario, where Mario is a lot of kind of stopping and thinking a little bit. And dealing with inertia in the jumps, I think, is a big thing, right, in Mario games. Like, you're getting into a flow, you're jumping, and then you're trying to make precision jumps onto tiny platforms and stopping on a pinpoint. But here, you're keeping on moving. But you're not moving super fast. So in a way, it feels a little bit weird. Like, I want to be able to stop, or I want to be able to move faster than I'm moving. Like, it ultimately feels like I'm being rushed, and at the same time, it feels too slow. So yeah, it's a little bit weird in that regard, but as a platform game, it's very good. They've made a lot of intricacies, you know, they even though it is one touch, they've given that like a lot of nuance, so you know that you do have to be like very, very precise with your jumps, with your timing, how long you touch the screen, you know. And they do, it's almost like Super Mario Brothers 2 kind of difficulty. I mean, like, lost levels, like the Japanese Super Mario Brothers 2, right?
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's a lot of bits where there's no way you can clear that gap unless there's like a flying Koopa and you have to be able to like bop that in midair, like at the right point, at the right arc of your jump in order to make the gap kind of thing. There's a lot of that kind of stuff. So it is very, very challenging. Like it's far harder than I thought it would be. But that's pretty cool. You know, I mean, there's a lot to it. The levels are well designed. And the other thing that's really addictive is Toad Rally, where it sort of gens up ghosts on kind of like chopped up bits of the regular stages, but they're in loops, like you're doing laps around one map or whatever, trying to collect as many coins as you can and then trying to do as many stunts off of jumps or whatever as you can, and you do that in 1 minute. And then like there's a crowd of toads watching you, and then, you know, it pits your toad total against theirs, and whoever gets the most coins within the 1 minute, they get all the toads, and then like the toads go in your village, which you can kind of build, and it's a little bit of a silly village building mini game. But yeah, I mean, it feels like Mario. It's a decent start, I think, for Nintendo on the platform, and it definitely feels good to just pay for it once and get all of it. But, and I said this on Twitter, like Super Mario Run is good, but what I want, what would make all the money, would be Super Mario Run Maker, like a free-to-play Super Mario Maker on iOS. You're doing it, and you can still make it an auto runner, but like give it all the different, like, you know, playing the original Super Mario Brothers art style or whatever, and then being able to make the courses yourself, like that would be all the money, I think. So,
oh yeah, like
yeah.
I mean, you could even make that free, and then you know,
for sure,
like
for
you
sure,
can then, make the levels for free, and then yeah, you have to pay to play them. Yeah,
up the fucking wall. Yeah.
There,
yeah. Because I would buy like fucking, you know, different tile sets or whatever, or different items to put in my levels, you know.
I could, for sure. I could imagine people paying like an extra $5 or maybe even the whole extra $10 just to go back to like 8-bit aesthetic or something like that.
Yeah, I would do that with it because I just hate the way this game looks so much, you know, and the way it sounds, because it's got that, you know, post Koji Kondo like really fucking bad new Super Mario Brothers music, you know, all the
does exactly. Mario have a voice? So do you say woo-hoo?
Yeah, and then he goes at the end, he goes, oh yeah, Mario time. Yeah, that's great.
I see. the only auto runner I've ever played on my phone is Cannibalt. So
going all the way back, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there were two Rayman games. No, there were three Rayman games on mobile. Around, they were timed around like when Rayman Origins and then Legends came out. And they were excellent. Very, very good. Very well put together.
And they were cheaper, I think, right?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I'm not sure. Quite probably.
Yeah, yeah, so they had like more mechanics than just jumping, right? You had to like swipe and do other things too, right?
Yeah, you could punch and stuff. Yeah, there was a little bit more to it. But yeah, I can't remember them that well. But yeah, I remember them being pretty good. But yeah, Mario Run's good. It's good. It's probably worth like the 1,200 yen or whatever. So
probably.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're a horrible indignant, you know. Must have
unless you've never heard of freeware, ever.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, there's no reason for you to, I suppose, in this day and age. Nobody remembers the public domain getting a bunch of discs for 50p and then shipping off for the real version.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Doom.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What have you guys played this week? Nothing much.
Okay, so I've played 3 total games. How about you, Jason?
Just the one that I talked about last week, briefly.
Okay, do you want to talk more about that?
Sure.
Okay, we'll sandwich it then.
All right.
I'll just talk briefly about one update to a game, or a seasonal event. I've been playing Overwatch, the new Winter event just came out this week, a few days ago, and so this is the snow time, happy fun time, holiday event that you're going to get, and just like every other event, it comes with its loot boxes and a special brawl. So in the summer games, we got Lucio Ball, which was just Rocket League with Lucio. Then for Halloween, you got Junkenstein's Revenge, which was... kind of an interesting little wave defense. And this time we've got Maze Snowball Challenge, which is absolute shit. I'm thoroughly convinced that nobody at Blizzard has ever actually been a participant in a snowball fight. Because in Maze Snowball Challenge, every player... is May, but your gun has been modified to launch a snowball, and it has a weird arc, which is already kind of interesting to get used to, because May, her icicle gun shoots in a straight line, not an arc, so you get one bullet, and there are snow piles around the area that you can reload from, but it takes a little bit of time. And there's a challenge in the game in that it's one hit, one kill. It's instant death, one hit KO. And that is where I, you know, kind of hate the game, because if you've ever played snowball fights when you were a kid, then you... Who has a snowball fight where, like, if you get hit with a snowball, you're out forever? Like, that's not how it works.
There's no respawn?
There's no respawn, no.
What?
You get hit, you're out until basically everyone on your team or the other team is out. There you go. That's that. Like, there are, like, six rounds. I think there were six rounds, maybe five. It's just go out, get hit, you're dead. Hey, have fun watching everybody else play. They could have easily changed it so that, you know, the snowball does a little bit of damage and then you have to reload, and that would have been more fun. Or just make it so that if you get hit with the snowball, you get a point. And then whoever gets the most points at the end of a certain amount of time wins. So that was greatly disappointing. And that is that.
Cool. All right. So the game I played, I mentioned it briefly last week, is called Icey. The only thing I said last week was the review, the best review that I saw on Steam, was that it is the Stanley Parable if it were made by Platinum Games. And last week I'd only played about 20 minutes of it. I actually finished it this week. And yeah, that's about right. That's about what it is. So the basic gameplay is sort of like it's a 2D side-scrolling hack and slash. I don't know if you guys ever played this old Wii game. I think it was on Vita 2, Muramasa the Demon Blade.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. Like, the gameplay is quite a lot like that, actually.
So less platinum, more vanillaware then, right?
Kinda, but the aesthetic is a lot more like Revengeance or something.
You know, okay.
You have the sort of like button combos that you can do. Like, if you press up an attack, you do a little uppercut. If you press down an attack, you do a little, you know, down smash if you're in the air. There are like some unlockable combos that you can get through in-game money you get from defeating enemies. So like, if you unlock another combo, you can do like a weak, 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 strong, strong combo, or you can do one that's like weak, weak, strong, strong, strong combo. And they're actually useful because they all have different sort of effects at the end of them. So like, one combo will have a little area of effect at the end of it, or one will do like this like pummel attack with a strong finisher on it, or one might launch an enemy up into the air. So it's actually really useful to unlock these different combos, as opposed from just being, you know, flash or different ways to play the game. And the combat is actually really interesting too, because the enemies are actually quite difficult. They have pretty unpredictable patterns, and if you don't learn the patterns, you're going to own it pretty hard. It is kind of easy to cheese towards the end though, because you get this one particular move where if you dash through an enemy attack, then you get a little quick time button press, which is like an instant counter to the attack. but you have to time it right. And you eventually learn to like upgrade your dash to be infinite, so you can just sort of like dash around the whole screen through the air for free, which is fine though, because the later bosses you kind of need it. So that's like the basic gameplay of the game, but like the actual game is more about like the meta game of what's going on. So you start off and there's a narrator that's telling you where to go, and he's like, okay, Icy must follow the arrows, just follow the arrows. And so the first chance I got, of course, I didn't follow the arrows. So I went off the other side of the screen, and the narrator says, oh, so Icy decided to go this other way, even though she knows she should follow the arrows. Let's see what she does. And it's actually kind of interesting, because like the narrator will get upset at you going into different places. And then there are like certain secret areas you can go into. You can find like this one room I found had a bunch of mails to the narrator, and it turns out the narrator is like the programmer of the game. And like you find a bunch of mails of his subordinates like talking trash about him, and he gets all pissy about that. That's kind of funny. What you get towards like more of the secret endings, it's kind of like in the Stanley Parable, where you can have like, I mean, how many endings were in that game? Like a lot, right?
Well, it never came out to console, so we wouldn't know.
Yeah, I know there was a lot. Yeah,
there was a lot, and there's a lot of endings in this game. Like you'll get to a certain room, and then like something will happen between you and the narrator, and then the game will sort of like give you a little game over screen, and you go back to the level select, and you can choose your level and try again and go for a different area. And it sort of comes down to like who is actually playing this game. Like, are you playing the game? Is the narrator
playing you?
Is the game playing you? Is Icy the one who's actually playing the game? You know, what is your, you know, definition of choice within a game? Like, what are you actually trying to do here? Are you trying to like beat the game? Are you trying to just piss the narrator off? Are you trying to uncover secrets? So that's actually where the interesting part of the game comes in, is really like the little meta choices and what you decide to do and where to go and how you interact between the narrator, your playable character, and actually you as a person. It's actually really good. And I'm really impressed with the developer, because it turns out he's just like basically one guy in China who's been making this game for 10 years. And it's really, really good.
Hmm. Good team. Chad, tell us about Batman.
Batman. It has misused commas. So literally,
I saw this. Yep. Done.
Yep. Yeah. Call me Bruce.
Bruce.
yeah. So harping on a small
one
little
detail.
That's right. Yeah. First off, I will say this is definitely a Telltale game. As soon as the game started up, I was getting frame rates around like 10 to 15 FPS, which
is wrong with them?
I know, upgrade the engine or something, please, Telltale.
But it's always been like that from like the first when they were doing those Monkey Island episodes.
Yeah,
do they make it in Unity?
I don't know what they make it in.
I think it's their own proprietary engine.
I think so. Yeah, but I mean, I will say it's not as bad as, for example, Walking Dead Season 1, which would just chug constantly. But it is absolutely noticeable, especially if there's more than like two characters on the screen, which happens quite a lot. But when it is running nice, then it feels nice. And thankfully, like the action segments are actually quite well done. I was kind of worried about how this would play out because, you know, I play The Walking Dead seasons. I haven't gotten back to Game of Thrones. But anyway, Batman is all about, like, fast-paced action fighting. So I was kind of worried about, you know, okay, it's going to, like, do a kind of Zack Snyder thing where it's going to slow down and then go fast and slow down and go fast for every little action. And thankfully, it doesn't. There's, like, a little meter in the corner where some things that will let slide if you kind of miss a certain action, but it just basically goes on without much input from you. So if you miss too many, then it's like, okay, we're gonna ding you for that. Yeah, it's really interesting. So I've only played episode one, and you spend a lot of time as Bruce Wayne, which was kind of interesting, and it's telling kind of like its own story. It's not going off of any comic, and it's definitely not related to like the Arkham series. So for example, the Penguin is a kind of major role in episode one, and he's just like this young guy as young as Bruce Wayne, who is skinny, and he hasn't started up his criminal empire yet, and doesn't wear like a top hat or anything. Like, he's just some guy, and it's kind of interesting. Bruce calls him Oz. Hey Oz, what's up? You know, Oswald Cobblepot. Anyway, it's interesting. And then when you get to the Batman segments, there are kind of the detective mode stuff from Arkham Origins. And you'll go into a scene where things happen, and you kind of have to find out exactly what happened through your little tech gear. And the way it does this, it's kind of interesting. You look at pieces of evidence, and you have to link them together to find out, like, what caused an explosion, for example, or what killed this person. Although I will say, one problem I have with it, and this is kind of been a persistent problem as well, is it doesn't always know what you've done in sequence. So, for example, I in an early part in the game, or in the chapter, you have access to the Batcave, and you can look at the codex to find out information on all these various people. One of the people is Oswald Cobblepot. So I looked at his profile. I was like, all right, that's kind of interesting. And then later, Cobblepot comes on the Bat computer, and you get to see his criminal record. And Bruce says, like, oh my God, he's been doing prison riots and all this kind of stuff. And wow, I didn't know about this. And I'm like, you literally just read it 5 seconds ago on the codex. Right. But yeah, so there was stuff like that. Other than like those small little nitpicks, it is an interesting game, and I like that it seems to be going more down a route that's focused on Bruce Wayne changing Gotham instead of just, I'm Batman and I'm going to beat up a lot of guys. Of course, that is in there, but it's not quite as prominent as you might think.
And that goes with what Telltale do. You know,
sure.
Action games, so yeah. That's smart.
Yeah. And then just like one last thing I really loved is when you are in the Batman mode, you kind of get to set up a plan of attack. So you have a little drone scout that looks around, and you can spot all the enemies and basically plot out what you're going to do. And then it basically carries out that sequence of actions. That was kind of interesting. I like that.
Yep. Cool. Was that it?
Oh, I also played Let It Die.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I'm going to try to keep this one a little bit more condensed, right, because I played 2 hours and it's apparently a really deep game. That is absolutely a Suda 51 game. Straight from the start. Yeah, it's wonderful. Like, you start out and you have to pick your character, and it's on a subway, and it's all like these mostly naked people except for their underwear, but they're attached to like these matrix style tubes. You pick one, and he gets off the train and is immediately met by a skateboarding dude dressed as Death, who calls himself, strangely enough, Uncle Death. And there's some really weird casting choices, like Mark Hamill is the narrator, and he sounds like, you know, Joker style Mark Hamill. Like Billy Dee Williams is apparently one of the characters you can play as.
Nice.
There's a lot of strange choices going on. The game itself is it's free to play single player brawler. So you go into a kind of tower, and it's procedurally generated. There's like set rooms, but they're, you know, arranged randomly. There's these you know, people you have to fight inside, and they have all kinds of various weapons, and in that way it's kind of like Borderlands-ish, if Borderlands focus more on melee. So you punch people, they drop their weapons, but their weapons all have durability, and it's usually pretty low because the durability is also used while they are using it. So you have to kill them quickly to get kind of a weapon that makes you stronger, and then go kill more people. And as you're killing people, you get kill coins and experience, which can later be used in the waiting room, which is like your home base, to purchase gear and stuff like that, which is important because the title, Let It Die, is a reference to what you're basically supposed to do to your characters. Because it is a roguelike with permadeath. So if your characters die, that's it for them. You have to choose a new fighter. Or if you survive, you can put your characters into a freezer and basically select a new character to kind of level up two characters at the same time, which is important because you can send your fighters to other players online to basically grief them and kill them and get some extra loot and coins and stuff. So in my playthrough, like I said, I played about 2 hours. I came across three different haters. They're called haters when you send them across. And they are much, much stronger than the regular AI. And smarter as well. Like they'll guard a lot more. But when you kill them, you get a special kind of currency, which is used to upgrade different kinds of things. And, there's a whole lot of depth going on here, like leveling up, getting blueprints to get better equipment, buying decals that you can attach to your body to give you various effects. Like I got a mosquito decal that gives me HP based on how much damage I do. Yeah, there's a lot going on. The free-to-play aspect, from what I've read, there's more coming up, but right now all you can buy are death medals. So death medals, when you die, you can use a death medal to basically resurrect yourself with all of your items still intact and everything, because, you know, you might not want to lose all the things you just got, or you might not want to lose that particular fighter. So you can spend a death medal to do that, and that's the thing you buy with real-world currency, but I haven't really found a need to buy those yet. And I probably won't, but...
Yeah, I've heard it likened to kind of like buying another credit in an arcade game, basically.
Right, yeah. Yeah. There is stuff coming later, apparently. Like, there's mentions to an Express Pass, which gives you, like, special decals to give you more HP or more money in-game, as well as letting you use the elevator for free. The elevator lets you go to levels you've already been to without running up every level individually. So, yeah. There's that, but that's apparently not implemented just yet. So for now, it seems pretty easy, and it's not a great game. Combat is super slow, and you only have one attack per hand. There's no combos or anything. It's just based on your weapon. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's a distraction, and it's free to play. So
yeah. Yeah, it seems neat.
Yeah, and it's Suda 51, so yeah, it's interesting that. Yeah.
Sure. All right then. Well, let's continue the troll through the Kaiju Pop Awards as we run through. Well, this week in just a little bit, we'll run through awards 13 to 18. But first, starting this week and continuing till the end of this year, each one of us will take our turns to reveal our best games of 2016. And up first, mainly because I, neither me nor Chad were comfortable with our three I think I've got my three locked in now. But Jason, you had your three locked in a good bit before either of us two. So you're up first.
Yeah, I wasn't going to play Final Fantasy 15, so not going to be on the list. so should I start at the bottom then?
You can do. All right. Depends whether you want to keep us in Tinder Exile.
Second runner-up.
Second runner-up is, drumroll please. There we go. All right. Dark Souls 3 is my second runner-up for this year.
Okay.
And I picked it for a second runner-up mainly because, like, it's a great game. I love the game. I love Dark Souls. But, like, I'm really kind of glad this is the last one because it's pretty samey. Like, I love it. Don't get me wrong. But, like, I can't really see them doing a whole lot more with it. It's great. It's good. I love it. Not really a lot to say about it. I guess go read Chad's review about it. It's awesome.
Right.
The game or my review?
Go back and listen to the...
Both, Chad. Both. You're an amazing writer.
Thank you.
The Dark Souls 3 spoiler cast.
Yeah, they could go back and listen to that, too.
That's right.
Be great. Are we going to do a spoiler cast for the DLC?
Maybe after the new year?
It's code for no.
Yeah, it was good DLC.
Yeah, maybe when the next one pops out.
We're just doing both at the same time. Okay, so that was my second runner-up. First runner-up is Doom. The new Doom. It was basically everything you could want out of a Doom game. Fast, frenetic, good gameplay. I really liked the addition of this, you know, the sort of semi-RPG aspect of leveling up your weapons and gear and stuff. It's pretty good. They keep coming out with a lot more free DLC for multiplayer only, which I don't really get into, so it's too bad for me, but I hear it's really good. And
just such a surprise, right? It seemed so out of touch, like looking at it beforehand, and then it turned out to be far more than I think anybody in their right mind had expected out of.
And people were also worried because they weren't sending out review copies, and this was before Bethesda announced that they weren't going to do that anymore. Have you tried the Snap Map at all?
I've played some of them. I haven't actually tried building anything. I don't think I'm really good enough to do that. I'd probably build like a room and put some demons in it and say, there's some demons. Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, though, you could actually make co-op gameplay modes out of those Snap Maps, right?
Yeah, you can. I mean, you can make some really crazy stuff. Like, I've seen some, like, Outlast-style levels where, like, you can't attack. You just have to, like, hide. I played one where it was basically like Super Mario with guns. It was pretty cool. Yeah, you can do some really crazy stuff with Snap Map. It's really amazing. But you got to know what you're doing, and it takes a lot of time. All right. And finally, the winner of my Game of the Year award is something you guys don't like, XCOM 2.
I like XCOM.
I'm surprised
it's your Game of the Year, though.
Why is that?
I don't know. I kind of like got the impression that it wasn't as good as the first one.
You mean
the first new one, I mean.
Yes and no. I think the customization options in the first one were made, like, by the time the second DLC had come out, were maybe a little bit better. But I really like the way they sort of reworked the feel of the game, the atmosphere, to feel more like the originals. Like, in the first game, you never really felt a lot of pressure. You're like, I can just sort of take my time and fart around, and, you know, I'm going to develop this thing and, you know, take my time. And in the second one, like, you got to go. Like, the aliens have you outgunned from the beginning. There's a doom counter, like, from day one. And you can't just sit on your laurels. You really got to move. And I really liked that, how they brought that sort of feeling back into it. I did kind of was a bit disappointed with the way they did the mechs in the second one. They weren't kind of cool like the first one. Because the first one, like, you literally chop the arms and legs off your dudes and slap robot parts on them. That's pretty hardcore.
Right.
The second one is just like, Shen died and made some robots and left them to you. here are some robots.
Yeah,
make some more.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's like literally a mech rather than what you just described for XCOM 1.
Well, they were MEC, M-E-C, which is an acronym for something I don't remember.
See, I see. Okay. Mechanically enhanced corpse?
Yeah, there you go.
Possibly. I'm not really sure. But yeah, there were a lot of things that were different. But I also really like the whole the stealth thing that they brought into the second one, where you're the insurgents and like you can set up your squad before you break cover and then like get this really big kill round to start off the mission. It did kind of screw me over at one point though, because I thought I could sort of play it like Metal Gear, you know, like sneak up and just get the objective and get out, which you kind of can do, but like the enemies, like the way they have like the enemy pods, patrolling, they teleport close to your location, like just so like you don't get complacent. So if you sneak around all the enemy pods and get close to the objectives, then like eventually you're going to have like literally every enemy pod in the whole level, like right on top of you, and you're going to get murdered. So it wasn't, it took me a while to figure that one out, but I really, really love the game. And there's also the fact that there's a really hardcore modding community behind it, at least on PC, which adds like just tons and tons of replayability. I don't know if you guys ever played Long War for the original one.
Nope.
No. But it added like, it doubled the class list. It added a whole bunch of different kinds of weapons, like three more tiers of weapons. It made the game about four times as long. There are like all sorts of customizations options, and that same team's been doing stuff for XCOM 2. I mean, there's just so much stuff you can get as far as mods go on the PC, and it's really, really good. I really love it. I just really love the sort of strategy, turn-based strategy games, and I think it was the best one of the year, so it's my favorite game of the year.
Sure. So I mean, earlier you were saying like we don't like XCOM, and like I do like XCOM. I like the series, but my biggest thing with it's not a complaint at all, is that, you know, it's just a time sink, and in 2016 we've just had so many games, I can't afford that much of a time sink.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Especially because, XCOM 2 came out on the Vita, and that was not very good.
It came out on the Vita?
I'm sorry. XCOM came out on the Vita, and that was terrible. Oh, okay. You know, I gave it a go, and I've got way too much stuff on the PS4 as it is. Yeah, I do like it. I do appreciate the series, and I know it's still like one of the greatest there is. But
yeah. I mean, I can. There's been like, and as my brother in particular really hates the new ones, because like you only get six guys. You don't have like a squad of 20 dudes that you can run in and like fight giant enemy hordes. And I'm like, well, that's just, it's a different game. So I mean, there are some people who sort of begrudge it its differences from the originals. But it's still a good game, and I really, really like it. I think it's pretty good.
All right. Well, that is Jason's top three of the year. I have just been handed a note here. Let me open it up. Crinkle, crinkle, crunch, crunch, and it says that Chris Charlton has been given the hook. He's been dragged off the stage, kicking and screaming. We had to mute his mic so you couldn't hear it. He may or may not be back, depending on whether he can break that fiberglass cane. But we'll see what happens there. In the meantime, we're going to move on to our awards. This is going to be a little bit interesting. I certainly enjoy it more when we have a three-way discussion than a two-way. especially since I'm sure Chris put on many of these games and he can't even fight for them now.
That's gonna be a problem.
Yeah. But we'll see how everything goes. We're completely 100% professional here. I have all of Absolutely. Chris's notes. Chris's notes just read, I'm right and everything else is shite. here we go. So we have 6 awards for you this week. Let's just do a quick recap of last week. We gave out Best Co-op to Dark Souls 3, Best Gaming Thing That Is Not a Game to Sony Japan's PlayStation ads, those wonderful musical jolly things. Then Worst Moment in Games went to the reactions to No Man's Sky being delayed and the disappointments in general involving death threats and such. Most Promising Kickstarter went to the System Shock remake. Flat Out Worst Game went to Trials of the Blood Dragon, that horrible, horrible fusion. And Most Significant News of the Year went to the SAG-AFTRA strike that could directly influence several games coming out soon. So we are going on to this week's selection, and I might have to shuffle some things around because Chris is not here, but I'll go, let's start with the Piles Award. So the Piles Award is somewhat related to our Toilet Award, in that this is the advanced version of that, whereas the Toilet Award is the one that's supposed to be quick and short and can be done in a simple, quick session. The Piles Award is for a handheld game that really sucks you in and will not let you go. And I am surprised that Jason has not added Hearthstone to this.
I kind of feel like it's too bite-sized. Like, I mean, unless you have a severe addiction to it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I mean, we did give it the Toilet Award before, but yeah.
Yeah.
These are meant for longer stints, and actually, I did add Darkest Dungeon for some reason, but I'll take that off because that got a Toilet runner-up as well. So let's go instead to the only two nominees, and that is Monster Hunter Generations and Zero Escape Zero Time Dilemma. Jason, I know you haven't played Monster Hunter. Have you ever played any of the Zero Escape series?
I haven't.
Okay.
I haven't.
I'm not sure. I've
read about it. I haven't played them.
Has Zero Escape even come out on PC?
I doubt it. I don't think so.
I know Danganronpa did this year, and that's another amazing series. Zero Escape, Zero Time Dilemma has come out for Steam. So shame on you for not picking that up. Shame. But it wouldn't have been a handheld game for you anyway, unless you dragged that PC in there. But anyway, so Monster Hunter Generations, it's Monster Hunter. So average hunts are going to take you about 15 to 20 minutes. And that's if you're in a group. They can take a lot longer if you're solo. I've had several fights that have gone 40 to 50 minutes. This is a game you will be spending hundreds and hundreds of hours on if it sinks its claws into you.
That was going to be my point, is that you got to actually get into the game first before you can get sucked into it. Like, you got to put some effort, some effort into, like, getting sucked into this game. It won't do it by itself.
Which is, you know, fair, and that's for many games of this type. That's going to be how it's going to work. Monster Hunter does have a lot of mechanics, and it needs to introduce them all to you. I completely understand there are people who get bored before the first egg hunting quest and are just like, okay, I'm out of here. Just like people got bored with No Man's Sky the moment it said, hey, your first objective is walk 15 minutes that way.
Yeah.
With very limited running and...
Until you figure out you can do that slick... run jump thing with your jetpack,
and then it's only 12 minutes. The other option on the table here is Zero Escape. Like I said, the Zero Escape series is a visual novel series about 9 people basically hurtled into a confined area, and they have to solve puzzles, and there's also kind of murder mystery going on at the same time, so they're always there's always an air of distrust and not knowing what's going on. And the most interesting thing about the entire series is that you as the player also don't know what's going on, even if you finish the game, because there are so many branching paths to these stories. And Zero Time Dilemma in particular branched them into a lot of different bite-sized chunks, so you couldn't just play one game all the way through like you could with the first two games. You had to select which group you wanted to play and which little chunk you wanted to play, and eventually as you kept doing these they would start to link together and then unlock more options for you.
My understanding was that it was something like a supernatural Saw movie that you could play.
That's pretty fair. The poster the artwork for the game itself is a man kind of strapped into a chair with a woman holding a revolver to his head, and that's one of the decision games you have to play in the game. So there are several decision games where you have to choose like who dies or what pill you're going to take or if you're going to press a button or not, and all sorts of different things go on. And there's a wide variety and you never know what's going on. And yeah, you just have to play through the game many, many, many times to find out like the true story. And it's a game that, you know, it had me hooked from start to finish. It looks all right, but the animation is terrible. So the watching the like, if everything was still frame, it would be amazing. But as soon as things start moving, you're like, that is awful. But the voice acting is amazing. The music's amazing. I wish they hadn't animated anything because the first two are not animated. Oh, I don't. Anyway.
Did you listen to the Japanese voice acting or the English one?
I listened to the Japanese.
Okay.
Yeah, I did switch the English on occasion, but yeah, mostly Japanese. That personally is going to be my pick for the winner.
I think I'd probably second that, even though like I haven't played either of them, but I would second that just because of my prior point about Monster Hunter, in that like you got to put some effort into that one. Like, it doesn't just suck you in, but from what you're saying, Zero Time can just suck you in. So yeah, I think I'd back you up on that.
All right. Well, there is that game, and I'm going to scroll, because I have to find something that Chris wasn't heavily involved in, just in case he does pop back in. Let's go to Best Combat. Best Combat is self-explanatory, I hope. We don't really need to explain the award. We have 6 entries here. I'll just run through them. We have Overwatch, Enter the Gungeon, Dark Souls 3, Titanfall 2, Fury, and XCOM 2. So let's get these out of the way. Can we clear anything? I know Chris put in Titanfall 2, and neither of us had played that. So
I really can't say anything about that. We can, yeah. I guess,
yeah.
Check it.
Goodbye, Titanfall 2. You will be missed.
Do you want to keep Enter the Gungeon? Like, we both played it, but like, is it really like
it's notable a combat? It's a standard shooter, so I'm fine with getting rid of it. I would honestly dump XCOM 2 because I mean, yeah, it's strategic combat. That's not like
action combat, but it's still right. Combat.
Yeah, if you can make a strong case for it, I'll listen.
Well, I would say this is the one I put on there because it's engaging. Like, mm-hmm. It's really, really engaging, and you have to sit and think. And that's basically the whole game. Like, there is the base management aspect, yes, but most of the game is the strategic combat, and that's what I really like about the game, is that, you know, planning your moves out ahead of time, you know, knowing what you're capable of and what you're not capable of, and you're running the odds in your head about what's possible, what's going to happen. It's just, I really enjoy the thought process of it and trying to maximize the effectiveness of your squad in combat.
But in the end, I'd say it loses because it comes down to dice rolls. And that. In terms of strategy, that's always great. But in terms of just enjoyable combat itself, like, there is nothing more frustrating than going like, oh, 90% chance to hit, and you miss.
That's true. That's true.
So I'm going to dump that. I'm sorry.
All right. That's fine.
Overwatch, Dark Souls 3, and Fury. We've both played Dark Souls 3, obviously. Have you played Fury? I know you played Overwatch, like, the original beta, but...
I played about three or four levels. I beat the Bound Lady.
That's level two, the Chained. Level two.
Yeah, the Chained, and I think I beat the... What was the next one after that?
He was the Time Guy.
Time Guy. No, so I didn't get... I beat the first two levels then. So, okay. Yeah, I did play it.
Yep. So Overwatch, obviously, character-based combat, where, especially if you go on competitive or now quick play, you have to build an actual team. You can't just stack characters, so you have to think about how characters relate to one another. That's why I put that on there. Dark Souls 3, for obvious reasons, just a wonderfully done combat system involving stamina, equipment weight, different kinds of weapons, different attack styles, whether you hold a weapon in one hand or two hand, blocking, dodging, magic, all sorts of things give you complete freedom of how you want to play, and it works.
Yeah, I would question, like, the actual nomination of Overwatch for best combat, mm-hmm. because, I mean, is the combat itself really that much different from other team-based shooters? Like you mentioned, like, the team composition aspect, but that's not really combat.
Mm-hmm. And I hear your complaints, and I dump Overwatch. So we're best friends here. So we got Dark Souls 3 and Fury. I'm completely fine with giving it to Dark Souls 3.
It's much less, like, it's difficult, but it's much less frustrating than Fury. Much less frustrating.
Yep. And that's another win for From Software, because Bloodborne got it last year. Let's
congratulations. Move.
There you go. Next up, man, there's a lot of stuff that Chris added a lot of things to. Okay, well, we're just going to have to bump him off. We'll go back in order. So we have the best old game that you only played this year. Obviously, most of our awards are for games that only came out in 2016. This is specifically for games that came out before 2016, but we just got to them this year. So clearing out those backlogs and everything. We have a lot of stuff on here. Banner Saga, it technically came out on consoles this year, but it is an older PC game. Came out last year on PCs. The Fall, Invisible Inc., these are also PC ports that came to console. Rise of the Tomb Raider, Xbox port that came to PS4. Amnesia Collection, another PC. Necrodancer, PC port. And The Last Guardian and Final Fantasy XV were kind of added in as trolls. So I'm going to get rid of those two because those were released this year.
Oddly enough, all of these PC ports,
yep.
I only played this year. So.
Oh, well, there you go. Did Rise of the Tomb Raider come out on PC? I'm not sure.
Probably. Tomb Raider usually does.
Okay.
But I don't play Tomb Raider, so yeah. No idea.
I've only played, like, the original or the prologue, so I'm going to get rid of that. Invisible Inc., I haven't played at all, but Chris talks it up.
It was really good.
Yep.
It was really good.
The Fall, I haven't played at all. I can't comment.
I have no idea.
Okay, Goodbye the Fall. Banner Saga is amazing. Let's see. Amnesia Collection and Necrodancer.
I would keep Necrodancer. I really liked that game.
Honestly, out of these, I would say Necrodancer and Banner Saga. Because Banner Saga is amazing. You can play through it multiple times and change the story the way you want. All about surviving and the camaraderie you get with your people. And that Don Bluth style artistic design is amazing. Everything is awesome.
And I feel like the Banner Saga is just—it's so similar, not so similar, but it's quite similar to Invisible Inc. in that it's like got that turn-based, isometric combat thing going on. And Banner Saga is just better, so we can definitely get rid of Invisible Inc.
All right, then Necrodancer and Banner Saga—who wins it? I would say Banner Saga for me, but
We can go with that. Necrodancer already won another award.
All right, there you go. Congratulations, Banner Saga. I forget which studio made that. All right, next up we have the best worst game. This is a game where you know it's bad, or it looks bad, or it plays poorly, but you like it for whatever reason, and you can't stop playing it. So last year this went to Chris's choice, Puro Desu Yaroze, for various reasons. This year we have Demetrius, I don't even know what that is. Deadly Tower of Monsters, which I've heard of, but can't comment. I think these are all Chris's, except for my edition of No Man's Sky and The Last Guardian. Chris has added a typed comment saying no for The Last Guardian, so I will honor that because he can't be here, and I'll get rid of that. No Man's Sky, I had to say, is mine because, yes, I completely agree. It looks boring. It is boring because there's nothing to do and every planet's basically the same. We absolutely didn't get what we were promised in all of the stuff that Sean Murray said. But I can't help but... I don't play it anymore, but I couldn't help but love it. I needed to get to the center. I played that game for more than 60, maybe even like 80 hours. I went from planet to planet, whenever I went to a new system, I made it a point to go to every single planet and explore for at least like 10 minutes. And sometimes, yeah, I got these little pleasant surprises. So I greatly enjoyed it. It was a nice little relaxing game for me, and so it worked even before the new patch.
Now
he's back. He broke that fiberglass cane.
I am making a wrestling style run in here on this conversation.
He's gonna give a lariat to me
because I was. Obviously, I was. Let me backtrack a little bit.
Yeah,
sure. I had to step away. I don't know whether this was purveyed to the audience.
My
baby just woke up, and I had to give him a bottle. And being the kind, tender father I am, I gazed lovingly into my child's eyes as like I fed him this bottle for about a few seconds, and then given that he takes a long time, I was like, "Fuck it, I'm going to look at my phone." And so I was keeping up with the Google Doc as you guys were making your discussion, and let's wind this back to how Titanfall 2 was summarily deleted from Best Combat.
It was deleted because you weren't here to make a case for it.
Right.
And right. Neither of us have played it, so we can't keep it on if we can't comment on it.
That maybe, but now I'm here, and I'm here to tell you. I said on this very radio program that Titanfall 2 was like a first-person Vanquish because that's how good the combat in this game is. It is relentlessly intense. You can slide on your knees for ages and then make yourself invisible so the person suddenly can't see you, and then punch them in the face. And then wall runs and then jumps into robots and then stomping them with the robots and then hop out again. Oh, it's the best combat in a video game this year. You can't not have it in the conversation. It's at least better than Fury.
All right, fine. We will do a Kaiju Pop first. where we retroactively strip Fury of its runner-up title and give it to Titanfall 2. I'm sure that EA is breathing a sigh of relief at this moment.
Yep. Yep.
And the people at, what, Respawn? Remedy? I forget. No.
Respawn, yeah.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah. I also, like, instantly saw the best worst game Last Guardian was there a little bit for a second.
Yeah, well.
It's got to be, it's kind of like, best worst game is always kind of a guiltier pleasure than a Last Guardian, I think, you know.
Well, you put that on the list before it even came out.
No, I did. Yeah. I did.
No, you did? Right. Well, there you go. Yeah.
I actually put it on today because it looks pretty bad in several areas. And the controls are awful, like triangle to jump.
Yeah, but I mean, those are flaws. You know, I mean, like, it isn't, like, best worst game is a game that's more fundamentally flawed, which I think, like, is why No Man's Sky is a good call. It's very interesting that No Man's Sky is actually in line for best worst and worst best this year, which I think, like, is a complete first for this kind of thing. It's odd. I think, like, this award is odd because, like, a couple of years ago, like, there were more games that went in line with this. I think, like, the Best Worst Game Award has sort of sunk over the years we've been doing these awards because of the death of, like, the whatever you call it, the B-tier game or the single-A game, you know? Because you don't get these, like, valiant shit games, you know? I mean, like, you don't get the... THQ's gone now. You don't get that. You don't get stuff like Killer is Dead and, like, you know, things like that anymore. You know, they don't pop up as often, or I suppose, like, they turn into things like Let It Die, I guess.
Yeah. I was about to say,
it's weird. So, I mean, I kind of bolted No Man's Sky initially, and then, like, the more I thought about it, I was like, yeah, because, like, I played that game for probably a good, like, 15 hours or so, knowing that it was bollocks.
Yeah, and I just said that, like, I played it for 60 to 80, so.
Right, yeah. Right. Knowing that there's the exact
same experience. Yeah.
So little to redeem this, because, like, nothing happens in this fucking video game.
It's a mining simulator. Space mining. Right,
exactly. And yet, like, I was still playing it. I think it's the very sort of, almost the epitome of it. I think No Man's Sky should win, absolutely.
Yeah. So we're inconsistent there.
I mean, the other two things kind of only I played, and so I will take off Deadly Tower Monsters and say Demetrius should win. That is a game that's not, I haven't actually reviewed it yet. It's sort of in the list of things to go up on the website. I talked about it on the podcast a while ago, like, in terms of it being, like, this very sort of fucking pixel hunting, obscenely, not completely obtuse, but just, like, why would I fucking know that without, like, accidentally clicking on this tiny pixel wide item kind of adventure game. But there's a charm to it.
Okay, that's the one you played along with Silence.
Yeah, right, exactly. Okay. Yeah. It's very low budget, and it's obscenely obtuse, but, I mean, at the same time, and it's full of very sort of cheap scatological humor as well, but, like, there's something kind of, yeah, it's got this weird Gallic French charm to it. I kind of enjoy it, and I am still actually playing it when I should have given up and given it a one go. So yeah,
all right. Well, then it's fortunate that you're here, because that means we don't have to get out of this little 6 award block. We kind of danced around to the bottom of this group, but now we can go on to Best Sound.
Best Sounds last year won by Witcher 3. This year, oh, we've got a late write-in for Doom, which I'm surprised wasn't on this list to start with.
Yeah.
So we got Doom, Overwatch, Final Fantasy 15, Final Station, and Thumper.
I kind of want to give it to Doom just because the spectrographic recordings had the pentagram in the music.
It's pretty clever.
I think we can cut this down to three, right? And you kind of know what three I'm thinking.
I don't.
Thumper, Doom, and Final Station?
No, I'm thinking of Thumper, Doom, and Final Fantasy, actually.
I'm going to make an argument for Overwatch. Not based on the music, but on the actual award's name, the best sound.
Yeah.
So Overwatch, the sound designers did some amazing work in that every single character has not only a different sound for their guns, so you can identify them just by that sound, but also for their footsteps. They also did special work so that the enemy footsteps are louder than your friend's footsteps, so you can hear people coming and you know exactly who they are and where they are, which is very important in a shooter like this. And then they also did kind of special voice work in that when characters are doing their you know, ultimate moves, the enemies will shout them out so you can hear them, and the enemy team doing them, it's interesting, they'll do them in a foreign language. So if it's, for example, Mei, she'll scream it in Chinese. If it's Widowmaker, she'll scream it in French. If it's your ally, she'll still say it, not a full shout, but in English. So if you hear them say something in English, you know that it's your guy doing it. You don't really need to worry about anything. And if you hear it in a foreign language, you're like, okay, something is coming now. I was about to get to those. The English-speaking characters also have different lines. So, for example, McCree's famous "It's high noon" is only when it's the enemy McCree saying it. If it's an ally, he says "Step right up." So, again, you know that you don't need to worry if you hear "Step right up," but if you hear "It's high noon," you gotta run. I just really like that overall sound design that just kind of helps you play.
I think Thumper is also from an overall sound design perspective, and not necessarily the music. I mean, the music, the sort of soundscape, it's not something that you're going to buy the soundtrack for because it's right, so yeah, discordant, right? But this game that, you know, it was supposed to be about rhythm violence or rhythm horror, and like it feels really interesting to be playing a rhythm game that is kind of a horror game in a sense, that is very, very industrial. It's completely different to any game of its type that there's been. It's interesting. Thumper isn't a music game per se, it's a rhythm game. So, you know, it's not something that you can play with your eyes closed, for instance. It is just so atmospheric, so you know, almost oppressive in a way, and I love when you are hitting it, when you are hitting every note, how you're kind of putting in these instrumental like sharp strings or like these very, very heavy sort of percussive hits. It feels in a sonic way, it feels visceral in the true sense of the word.
Yeah. Banging against like those walls is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm gonna swing hard for Thumper. Jason, I'm guessing you're thinking Doom.
But I mean, I don't think there's any specific like really hard push I can make for it like you guys have done. I just think it's generally all around a really good job. I mean, the atmospheric, the music, the like Chad mentioned, the hidden messages within the track. I just think it's really all the way done well. So, yeah.
Huh. So it seems weird that I almost I sort of assumed that Chad would be pushing harder for Final Fantasy 15 than Overwatch.
Honestly, Final Fantasy 15, like the biggest sound that I love is the fact that you can get the old tracks, the old soundtracks, and play them in your
that's
car.
Pretty that's pretty damning. Yeah. Okay. All right. So Thumper, Overwatch, and Doom. I mean, like, those are all, like, pretty... You could say either one of those three, any one of those three could have win it.
Mm-hmm.
But if Jason's the biggest sort of Doom here, and...
If I was going to choose a different one, I would probably go with Chad's argument for Overwatch, just because of the technical aspects of the sound design.
Mm-hmm.
I would, if I was going to change, I would go for Overwatch.
All right.
Well, then that's 2-1 for Overwatch over Thumper.
Well done, Blizzard.
Upset. Overwatch is first. Blizzard's first this year.
I think that's the first time we've actually just had a winner that is basically sound design and not music. Or you know, the track itself. Again, Thumper is not really music itself, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. What's next?
Hang last on. One is value for money.
The value for money award. This is always one. You guys should have done that one when I wasn't here. Because value for money is always the one where I bow out, because value for money for me is, if I play it half an hour a day, can I finish it within a week? Super. I am not a 60-hour video game gamer. Which Final Fantasy 15 being under my Christmas tree does not bode well for that. That game's lifespan of my.
Well, I've heard you can finish that in 15 hours. So
I'd speedrunner.
There you go. We've got Overwatch, Darkest Dungeon, Persona 5, and Hyper Light Drifter.
I put that on there just because of the low price and the amount of a game you get for the price.
Yeah, which is certainly fine. I mean, Chris, would you even say Super Mario Run?
It's such a fucking weird space, and you could almost make the argument of you get more, not more game, but not more quote, but more quote unquote content from a free to play game. Once you're into mobile games, it gets in a really weird.
Yeah,
really weird thing.
Because I mean, we could say like Pokemon Go, which you don't even pay for, and
yeah, there you go. well, no, I mean, like, yeah,
it's infinite value. Divide by zero.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, destroy the universe. I would make the strongest case for Persona 5. Because I've put in about 100 hours into that game and finished it just once. It's amazing. It's got an incredible story that you can play more than once, and get kind of different results. Not different endings, but different kind of results. There are some ways that things can play out that I don't really want to reveal. So that's really interesting to me. And number two would be, for my bet, would be Darkest Dungeon, because that's just complete roguelike, and combat's amazing. Every time I go into a dungeon, I love, you know, exploring. I love getting the new characters and leveling them up, finding new items and all kinds of things. And super atmospheric, wonderful music, wonderful narrator. So you can play that one forever.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'd agree with Darkest Dungeon. Persona 5, I'm just like, eh. I mean, you got to be the kind of person who's really going to enjoy that, I think. And not everybody would. I mean, although I guess that's the same thing about any of the other games. But I kind of feel like
it for it to be a thing.
Yes. Yeah, I think I would probably want to go with Overwatch and Darkest Dungeon just because of the infinite replayability factor. Like, it's infinite value, you know? You can just keep playing. You pay once and keep playing forever or until you don't want to play anymore. The other two do end. And while I did love Hyper Light Drifter, it is kind of short. And though it only it's a very low price and it's a really great game, it's not particularly long.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go on board with that. I can give it to Overwatch because of like the various events and things. Even though like the snowball event sucks, it still drew me back in after kind of a drought. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe one of these days it could be another win for No Man's Sky, which might turn out to be the best game of all time in terms of the number of Kaiju Pop Awards it's won.
I mean, with all these games like No Man's Sky, The Division, now Final Fantasy, adding in story patch and stuff, maybe next year we need to have best game that turned itself around or something.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good idea for a thing, right? Yeah. So what do we got? Overwatch over Darkest Dungeon, is that right?
Yeah.
Let's do that. And then that. So that was that's the six, last award this week. We've still got two more weeks of awards to get through and two more people to give their games of the year. So to run down, shall we do that? Do you want to run down? You already ran down the list before, right?
Yeah, we did last week. Yeah.
The whole thing. So your new winners are old game that we as a group played this year was Banner Saga. Over Crypt of the Necrodancer. Pals Award for the handheld game that sucks you in went to Zero Escape, Zero Time Dilemma over Monster Hunter Generations. The best worst game is No Man's Sky over Demetrius. The best sound is Overwatch over Thumper. Best combat went to Dark Souls 3 over Titanfall 2. Sounds like a bloody football score, doesn't it? Dark Souls 3. Bristol Wanderers 1.
Well, you heard about that interesting thing in November, right? Where it was like Battlefield 1, Titanfall 2, Mafia 3, what was 4? Gears of War 4. There was a 5 and a 6. Not Persona 5, but something 5 and there was a 6 as well. Oh, I can't remember. But Civ 6. Civ 5? Civ 6?
Civ 6.
So, yeah, something 5. I forget. But, yeah.
And then value for money, Overwatch, Darkest Dungeon, score draw, Paul. The Paul's result says home win. So, yes, those are the awards so far. Next week, you can look forward to the award for one of my favorite awards, the worst best game. I've been saving a rant for this one. So, look forward to that. Worst best game, we're also going to look at the Hocus script, the letdown of the year, best moment, surprise of the year, best skeuomorphia. Is that 6? Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So those are the awards we'll be looking at next week. We might possibly be looking at new video games this next week, maybe, if there are any. Are there any?
Just a small handful. And these will be the last releases of this year, at least according to my list. So we have the Eagle Flight is coming to the Vive. I think it's already out for the other VR systems. Halo Wars Definitive Edition to PC and Xbox One. Shantae Half Genie Hero is coming out to everything, including Wii U.
Is that your GeForce impression? You like the multiple.
Sorry, I'm holding the gamepad in my hand. You can't see it.
It's coming to the PlayStation 4, the Xbox One, the PC, and Wii U.
Yeah, and the Vita. Speaking of Telltale earlier, The Walking Dead Season 3 is coming out. This is a special one where you get Episodes 1 and 2 together. Then Wild Guns Reloaded, which is a complete remake of the old Wild Guns is coming to PS4, and it's made by the original guys. So if you were into that game, then there's that. Don Bradman Cricket 17. To PS... Bradman.
We all know Don Bradman.
PS4 and Xbox One, and Roller Coaster Dreams to PlayStation VR. And that is it for the year.
It's just being on the roller coaster. Right, yeah, that's it. That's crazy. Yeah.
Well, and the Assassin's Creed movie. And the Assassin's Creed.
I'm sure we'll be lining up to get a ticket for that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And by lining up to get a ticket, what I mean is not watching it. And what
ever.
Other people mean will be finding a fucking dodgy torrent of it somewhere. Is that a thing now? Do kids still do that? I notice nobody ever talks about torrents anymore.
Oh yeah, torrents are still a thing. Torrents are still
a
thing.
Yeah, a lot of the major sites have been getting knocked down, but the Pirate Bay is still up. So.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and if you frequent 4chan, you can still get torrent links for everything. So.
Right, but why? You were, yeah, in exchange for your soul, presumably.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, so, yeah, maybe not even anything to warrant picking a favorite.
Maybe Shantae? Shantae's usually pretty
good. Shantae's good, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, maybe Shantae is our pick for the week. But whether or not we talk about that, there will still be a lot of stuff going up on the website. The sort of Kaiju Pop Awards thing, there is just one post that's constantly being updated as we write up the new award winners. So there's all that. There's also retro features going up. I know like I've got a list of like 4 reviews that need to go up. Then presumably either mine or Chad's Game of the Years next week as well. So yeah, just a lot of stuff going up on kaijupop.com, so do visit there. You can also get to us on Twitter at kaijupop is the website's account. I am at ReasonJP.
I am at Kyoshi Banzai.
And I'm at Gibsaurus.
And we'll talk to you probably a little bit earlier next week to avoid the Christmas rush.
But, that's right. Yep.
Good. And that's it. Goodbye then.
Goodbye.
See ya.